Hey, how you doing? This is Wade. Just wanted to welcome everyone back and let you know that I got feedback from feedback. I put out a post a while ago. I got a ton of feedback. I'm trying to keep up with it all, but I put this out quick because I had one guy that was especially angry. But this is feedback about feedback from policing the industry, okay? I put out a couple posts. I got a ton of feedback on policing the industry. And it's basically about, will the tower industry police itself? And this did create a lot of controversy. So here's what I wanted to do. The first comment I got is, why did you remove my post? And I didn't. Here it is. It's just when I get this feedback, it doesn't post it. There's a difference. You can post a comment or you can give me feedback. That's why I got this out so quick. So here it is. And his name is one of the few intelligent ones. I don't think that's his real name, but I had to put it in there because it's sort of a good way to start. All right. Here's the comment. I will say this. You will never police the industry. Why? In most other industries, you have degrees, training, certs, etc. For example, to be an engineer, you need a degree, certs, etc. To be a manager, you need all plus more. See, this is the only industry I know where a person can have dropped out of high school, be working at a 7-Eleven on a Friday night, and the following Monday be a tower climber installing high-dollar equipment for major carriers. It is unbelievable. What I mean is, be careful what you ask for. This industry does not have professionals. There are some, but most rant and rave about being underpaid, so dangerous, etc. But yet the industry is filled with drinking, pot smoking, and not showing up for work on time. Roughnecks who do not know a thing about being a professional. If they were to make a qualification, a determination for employment, most of them would be cut. Your analysis on a regular basis would weed out another chunk. Punctuality would probably get the rest. The professional powers to be known this, and therefore it will never happen because 95% of the workforce will not make the cut. You better not police the industry, I should say. Why the industry is so dangerous. I've climbed for 20 years and have over 300 climbers under my supervision. And with no accidents or deaths, it is really quite simple. If you're physically tied to an object that is anchored in the ground, it's physically impossible to fall. Pretty simple, I think. When climbers fall 100% of the time, it is climber error. You never hear of equipment failing. Okay. Hey, tell me how you really feel. That was a great comment. But first off, congratulations on training so many climbers and not losing any. You worked with so many, you never lost any, and I really do want to thank you for that. That's really impressive. It sounds like you've been in the industry a long time, and it sounds like you preach 100% tie-off, which is awesome. That was quite the shift in the industry because nobody tied off because they thought it slowed them down. But now we realize we have to tie off 100% of the time. So, and you're correct about most of this. I mean, you have a lot of people in the industry that are just like you said, you know, a bunch of lugheads. Does that make it right or does that mean they're not ready for it? But it's just the way the industry is. You know, there was such a shortage of climbers for a while. They were desperate to get anybody. So you'd sort of hire anybody that was not afraid of, I hate to say not afraid of heights, but anyone who could climb and would climb a tower. Let me put it that way. So, and I met a lot of people that fit your description. I wish I could argue that point, but you are spot on. There's a ton of people like that. And you also make a great point about tying off. You know, there were a lot of different deaths last year. I want to point that out. There were rigging failures, you know, heart attacks on the tower, tower collapse, a lot of deaths like that. There were a lot of things that happened that go way beyond the climber. However, with that said, you're right. Most of the falls, the people weren't tied off. And when you look, and I'm just looking at 2014, when you look back throughout history, some of these guys that fall, they have their safety lanyards clipped on their belt. You know, they didn't do it on the way down. So you know that they didn't tie off, period. I mean, that's all you need to know. So anyway, as far as safety gear failures, there are failures with safety gear. But you know what? You are correct. With the safety lanyards, I don't know any that failed. I don't know any that failed. And I think that was your point here. Safety lanyards normally don't fail. You know, I mean, They catch you. That's their job, and they do their job, as far as I know, 100% of the time. So, I mean, you make a great point. This sounds silly, but you just made me think of a story. There was a climber out in California, big, heavy guy. He was wearing the wrong size belt. And this is common. This actually happened in Maryland. A kid died because he had the wrong size belt on. He had a large one, and he slipped through it. And this big, heavy guy had a medium one, so he didn't have everything buckled the way it was. Now, the guy in California lived. The guy in Maryland didn't. But knowing your gear, putting on the right gear, matters. Now, the guy in Maryland and the guy in California were both pressured by the foreman or project managers, but by the leaders on the job. When you have leaders that don't care about safety and take a lot of chances, you have climbers that don't care about safety and take a lot of chances. Leadership matters. Listen, just because you're not the foreman doesn't mean you can't be a leader. Leadership matters. You can be a leader by setting the example and by pointing out things that are wrong. Sure, a lot of people won't like it, and if it costs you your job, let me know. Reach out to me, because it happens. It's very frustrating, but it happens. Some guys just don't care. I wish we could take that out of the industry, but, you know, you make some great points. You know, your analysis test gets rid of a lot of people. Showing up for work on time gets rid of a lot of people. And unfortunately, I fired people for both. You know what I mean? Back when I ran crews, I fired people for both. I had one guy that just didn't show up on a job. And it was like a second, you know, you always have one good excuse, right? But it's hard to come up with three good excuses. And all I need to know is that you're not going to be there so I can make plans. But when you just don't show up for whatever reason, it's a real problem. And listen, I know we got kids, we got families, and we have reasons we don't show up. But how hard is it to make a phone call? You know, if something happens, and now in today's world, a phone call, a text, an email, there's 100 ways to get a hold of people. Anyway, I'm just blowing off steam, people. I'm sure any of you that ran crews have been there. Any of you that worked on crews and had someone that didn't show up, you've been there. It's just tough to get by when you're a man down or a woman down. Don't want to sound like a chauvinistic here, but when you're missing a person on the crew, it's a problem. Oh, by the way, I did see out there, there's a lot of, I guess there's a lot of guys that talked about having an all-woman crew. And if you women are fine with that, that's great. You know, I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying be careful when you do it. Man, woman, or whatever. Just, I don't think sex matters as much as responsible people matter. You want good people on your crew. I just want you to think about that. Let me give you the next comment. After 25 years in the business, I still find that one of the biggest problems is drugs on and off the job site. Another thing that causes us problems is Nate. Nate is like a lot of females. They love to keep something going all the time. And I'm a firm believer that if something isn't broke, don't fix it. My grandfather used to tell me, don't stir in shit, it will stink. If Nate could butt out and leave OSHA alone, we would be better off. All of these company owners that claim they are a member of Nate, and it is not nothing to be proud of. We have a safety guy in our company that is always talking about safety, 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 but out of the other side of his mouth, he condones smoking pot in the company on and off the job. It's BS. Okay, I take it you're not happy with Nate. I do know that Nate's trying to work towards a realistic safety training standards in the industry. They're trying to get the set standards. I mean, I really think they're making an effort for standards in the industry, and I think that's a good thing. So I just want you to think about that. Remember that nobody wants a climber to get hurt, and 100% tie-off is just probably the best way to do that at this point. All those falls, not all, but several falls that happened last year, if they just would have tied off, maybe all of them, and they would have been tied off properly, things would have worked out better. They would have had something to catch them. They might have been rattled. The job might not have get done, but the reality is it would have made a difference. But I know I give Nate a hard time, too, about a lot of things, but I do know for a fact they're working to make the industry as safe as it can be, because I think they realize every time someone gets hurt, every time someone dies in this industry, it gives the industry a bad name, makes it look more dangerous, and it's going to be harder to find people. And I think that's one thing a lot of people criticize my blog about, is because I bring that to light. I'm just trying to find a way for the climbers to represent themselves. And I came up with a lot of, you know, I talked about unionization, the industry policing itself. I talk about stuff like that. Some people don't want to hear it. And I know what you're saying. You're upset with Nate because they tend to make big issues out of some things. But boy, I gotta believe that all these that Nate has the climbers' safety in mind. I gotta believe that. And I think that any tower crew owner, well, most tower crew owners, I think really want everyone. I think all of them want their climbers to arrive alive every night at home. Well, or at least to the hotel room. I gotta believe that. I gotta believe there's good in people. And I know what you're saying. Some of these trainers are hypocrites. I don't know what to tell you about that. I really don't know what to say about that. You're right. I mean, you have good trainers and bad trainers. You have caring trainers. You have some people that it's a passion, and you have other people, it's just a job. It's a 9-to-5 job, or 8-to-5, or, you know, 7-to-6. If you ever work in this industry, it's usually 7-to-7. So you make a good point. All right. This is a long comment. Just be patient, okay? I happen to know the guy that put this out there. He's long-winded. Great guy. Super fantastic guy. He's been in the industry forever. You know, he was an iron worker and get into this, and I believe now he's around 70. But anyways, I really appreciate this comment. So here it goes. Comment. There are some interesting issues addressed in this forum that I agree with. There are no schools that can duplicate the effectiveness of on-the-job training. However, schools can teach a lot of important points to the green hand. For example, I don't think schools should teach the workers to become totally reliant upon their PPG. I believe that they should be taught to be as secure as possible on the tower without any PPG at all, and the PPG should be considered secondary. Learning where to position yourself to avoid danger has proven to be as much of a deterrent as a PPG. I think a false sense of security is experienced when a worker wraps their lanyard or hooks their hook off to over a member. He's talking about a cross member, probably. This is not a new argument. Years after an iron worker fell off the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, American Bridge went on strike while pressing the general contractor to put nets under the areas where they were working. Management claimed that a net would cause the men to feel a false sense of security and would result in more injuries because of carelessness. Eventually, after a short strike, the contractors capitulated and provided netting under the bridge, under the areas where the bridge spans, where they were being installed. What puzzles me about all this schooling and training is, what are the credentials of the people doing the schooling and training? Who is teaching the teachers? How many years of experience have they actually climbed, setting up iron, jumping poles, flagging cranes, using the basic techniques, or even tying knots? How many times have the teachers sat on top of a tower and actually endured the pain from harsh weather? Sorry, I lost my spot. The pain from harsh weather that could finish a job and be home for Christmas. Few of you have ever experienced these circumstances. Hey, I have. Let me tell you, I've been called out in Christmas a lot to do something stupid. Sorry, I'll go on. The brains of the industry forget that this is a job where the workers are given a task to perform and paid to get it done in a safe and timely manner. If the work is not done, nobody gets a dime. The workers that have the unique ability to get the work done safely need to be adequately compensated for what they contribute. And the wannabes, the professional resume writers and per diem collectors, and the PM brother-in-law contractors need to be eliminated. And this is the job of the project managers and the staffing people. A crew will police itself only after it has worked together for some period of time, but it takes time. Moving boomers in and out of state on an as-needed basis doesn't give regular workers the time to learn what the boomers know or tasks where they excel. All right, maybe my reading skills need a little bit of work. I'm sorry. But I get his point. Who's training the trainers? We got to worry about that. Well, first off, thanks for your feedback. I appreciate the honest feedback. And that was, while it was long, it was a very informative response to my post. And I think you're right. There's a lot of qualified people out there, but you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. The reason I got out of the industry, or I got out of climbing, and now I do, you know, a different type of job, this is one of the main reasons. The job became so devalued. It was hard to make a good living. It was hard to get ahead in the business. And it became a hassle for a lot of reasons. You had some good climbers, and you would hire new people, and a lot of new people came and went, came and went, came and went. And really, that's the theme of this, finding good people and who's training the trainers. We want trainers with experience that can really help us out. So you got to really think about training. What are you training the people to do? Are you training them to be safe and learn the gear? Is that what you want? You want a safety expert? Yes, that's where you start. Are you and I'm going to bring rope access in. I'm a big fan of rope access. I think if more climbers took a rope access class, they would be better off. So you want someone who's an expert in the gear and an expert on rescue to train you for that, right? And I agree with what you're saying. Do they train you to do the job, to position yourself in the tower? Maybe, maybe not. But you got to focus on what the training is. When you take an OSHA class, you don't expect them to talk about towers that much because they don't. You take an OSHA 10 class, only a little bit of it really pertains. I shouldn't say a little bit, but there's a portion of it that pertains to what you do. But the purpose of an OSHA 10 class is to have 10 hours of OSHA training that pertain to construction work and safety. Now, when you take a rescue class, the rescue class should really pertain to rescue, right? So you want someone who's qualified in rescue. That's, and I'm going to bring this up. We really rely on fire departments to help us out here because fire departments do a lot of rescue and they also are trained in tower rescue. Not all, but most. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're trained in a lot of things. That's one thing. So to this guy's point, you have to be trained how to work on the tower and how to position yourself. It's very important that you understand that. Unfortunately, that comes with on-the-job training, and you need to be trained, I'd say, by someone on the job. If you are trained by a tower climber, they will bring that up. I was trained by Wenton Wilcox, and that's one of the big things we brought up in class, is climbing the tower, how to climb the tower, and what to look for. Now, there's another thing, hazard assessment. There's something we all talk about, right? We have forms and paperwork, and we have checklists. But the reality is, until you do the job a few times, you don't know what to look for. You know, if you get a greenhorn out there, he looks up at the tower, and, oh, it looks good, looks solid, all that crap's hanging on it. But the reality is he doesn't look down. Are there any holes? What about your tag guy? Is he going to fall in a hole? Is he going to trip over hardware? Are there tower parts or antenna parts or arrays laying on the ground? If you've ever been in some of these towers, they got crap laying everywhere, old dishes and crap that you trip over. Sometimes there's old cars out there. You got to look for bees' nests. That's something a lot of people overlook. They just do. So I guess my point is, and his point is, experience really matters. And if you have experience on your crew, that guy's got to communicate to the younger people, to the people coming up in the ranks. It can be a fun job. Don't get me wrong. Really like tower climbing. It's fun. You have a lot of freedom. You know, you're out the tower. I'd like to say you set your own schedule, but you're really being pushed. But the reality is when you're out there, most guys like to work till they get a particular task done. You know, today we want to get the dish in the air. Tomorrow we'll align it. That's realistic. They might even spend, you know, they drive 4 hours and they spend the next 4 hours just putting the mounts together, putting the dishes together, doing inventory and staging. Then they may spend the next day, you rig the tower, you hang the mount, you want to hang the dish, you get to it, great. How's the weather? You know, you just got to look at a lot of different things. That comes with OJT. Training the trainer. I think it depends what the trainer is trained in. If the trainer is trained in safety and rescue and PPG, that's great. If you have an OSHA 10 trainer, that's great. When you go to CPR class, you learn CPR. When you go to first aid class, you learn first aid. When you're on the job training and tower work, that's what you're learning. You know your crane signals. Think about that. Are you able to communicate when the radio dies between you and the guy in the air? Are you going to just yell? Or are you going to say up, up, down, down? You're going to scream? Do you know what headache means? Headache, headache. You have a common term for all that? Have you communicated that? Do you talk about that at your tailgate meeting? Do you realize when you have your tailgate meeting that you're listening to background noise? Are you beside a highway? Is it windy that day? Are the people on the ground? Are you by a busy street? Can they even hear you when you go whoop, whoop? All right. Just bringing up some points. Listen, you want to be in this industry, you learn as much as you can. And I do get feedback from guys that have been on both sides. You know, they've been climbers, and then they moved up to foreman, then they became project managers, and they work for contractors who hire climbers because they've done the job. And they always have a different perspective being on each side. When you're on the contractor side, it's schedule, schedule, schedule. That's pounded into you every day. Push, push, push. Drive, drive, drive. When you're on the climber side, you're like, safety, do the job, do it right. We don't want to come back. Safety, do the job, do it right. We don't want to come back. And if someone pushes you too hard, you push back. And trust me, I don't know too many guys that can kick a tower crew's ass. I worked with some big guys. I'm only 5'10", and I was the runt, okay? It's just the way it was. Anyway, was I good? I thought I was. I could have been better. Don't get me wrong. So, all right. Now listen, be smart, be safe, pay attention to your task, follow your plan, but be ready to adapt, improvise, and overcome the obstacles in your way. And also, I'm going to be at IWCE speaking on March 17th. If you want to get a discount code, if you want to go to IWCE, enter the code capital S, capital P, capital K. Enter it today if you're going to go. If you want to go see me, I'm there the 17th in the afternoon at the round table sponsored by AGL. Jay Sharp Smith is going to be our moderator. So, and I'm really looking forward to it. So if you can make it, I'd love to see you there. Come and talk to me afterwards. I really look forward to speaking to everybody. I really do. I enjoy it. If you're listening to this podcast on the website, I'm on iTunes and Stitcher. Links are in the blog. Just, you know, subscribe, give me some feedback, write a review, let people know, share it. Don't keep it a secret, for crying out loud. What are you doing out there? Don't keep it a secret. Spread the word, spread the word. Okay. I got my products page, wadesarver.com. Just go on there. This is Wade with Wade for Wireless. And for crying out loud, I said it before, I'll say it again. Be smart, be safe, pay attention to your task. Follow your plan, but be ready to adapt, improvise, and overcome the obstacles in your way. And you'll be successful. Thanks, everybody.